for the program, folks. It's critical. Just go to www.theguyjamesshow.com. Don't forget, we're archived at the White Rose Society, the great White Rose Society, Mr. Ben Birch. I know everybody's asking for money right now, but it takes a little bit to keep things going, and I hope you'll remember us. Thank you for listening to the Guy Show, Guy James Show, and remember, you've heard from the Radical.
This is the Quality News Network. In Baghdad, the mutilated bodies of two missing U.S. soldiers that were kidnapped by insurgents at a checkpoint Friday have been recovered by the American military late yesterday. An Iraqi general is quoted as saying the soldiers were killed in a barbaric way. An Al-Qaeda in Iraq affiliated group is claiming responsibility for the deaths on their website, but that cannot be confirmed. In Basra, Iraq today, a suicide bomber attacked a crowd of elderly people waiting to collect their monthly pension. One person was killed. Earlier, a car bomb at a crowded Baghdad market killed seven people and wounded 18. On Capitol Hill, Senate Democrats have offered two non-binding resolutions for drawing down U.S. troops in Iraq. Republicans are calling both plans defeatist. Also on Capitol Hill, a Senate vote today on a measure that would have called for an investigation into military contracts waste and fraud was defeated. One Democrat says the American taxpayers are being fleeced by abuses in military spending. In Washington, a former Bush administration official with ties to disgraced lobbyist Jack Abramoff has been found guilty in a federal court on four of five felony counts of lying and obstructing justice. In Gaza today, three children were killed in an Israeli airstrike aimed at Palestinian militants. Nine bystanders were also injured. The United States has put its missile defense system on operational mode, according to a defense official. This comes in response to concerns that North Korea has put a long-range missile on a launching pad. Also today, in the Pacific Ocean off of Guam, the U.S. has begun one of the largest military exercises since the Vietnam War. Three aircraft carriers are taking part in the five-day war games. In New Orleans, 100 National Guard troops, along with 60 state police, are arriving at the mayor's request. Outbreak of violence this weekend, which killed six people, five of them teenagers. The IRS is giving more time to Gulf Coast taxpayers. The agency says they'll have an extra 7 weeks to file their tax returns for last year. In Sedona, Arizona, fire crews are still trying to control a 1,500-acre wildfire. There are other wildfires burning in Colorado, New Mexico, and California. In Central America, large waves from a Pacific storm 2,000 miles at sea battered coastal areas of Nicaragua and Guatemala. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
In New York, a scaled-back September 11th memorial has been unveiled. Developers were asked to reduce the cost to $500 million after the original plans neared $1 billion. In May, construction of new homes increased following three straight months of declines. Warmer, dry weather is credited for the better-than-expected boost, according to the Commerce Department. There are now nearly 9 million global millionaires, according to Merrill Lynch. The largest growth was seen in the Middle East due to record oil revenues. In New York, CBS has announced that former anchor Dan Rather has left the network. The 74-year-old journalist had been with CBS News for 44 years. Kmart is selling off some high-priced art from its corporate headquarters in Michigan. A rare Picasso tapestry is among the 1,000 art items being sold. Lego, the Danish company that has made those little plastic building blocks for more than 70 years, announced it is cutting 1,200 jobs. Its U.S. manufacturing plant will also be closed, and production will be moved to Mexico. The company says it will remold itself because kids nowadays prefer electronic toys. Light sweet crude settled at $68.94 a barrel today, and at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 33 points, the Nasdaq down 3 points, and the S&P 500 was flat. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Roll up your sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning.
Monday warrior, me's right.
To taking back America from the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and expect the working people to pay for their billionaires' gains. It's time for the Bruce Birch Radio Program, brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream each and every day. You can get in on the program by dialing in to 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And now, your host, Bruce Birch.
All right. Welcome to Radio for a Free America and the Bruce Birch Radio Program. I'm Bruce Birch, and we got a lot of stuff on tap for you today. Here, the first show of the week. First of all, before I go any further, let me please apologize to you from all of the people at the Head On Radio Network for the programming issues yesterday. We had an unexpected situation that we had to deal with. So, you know what? We're glad we're back today live, and, you know, fantastic. Gotta do what you gotta do. Interesting stuff happening out there in the world today, but before we get into too much of that, I wanted to let you know that you are always welcome to join us in the Tom Hartman, or excuse me. You know, sometimes the brain, the mouth works before the brain has a chance to catch up, and this today seems to be one of those days. It really does. But you can join us there, too. Join us in the Head On Radio Network chat room at headonradionetwork.com. Click on live chat there, and it'll shoot you right into our chat room. You register your name, and then you can go right in and chat with some of the fantastic chat-alicious folks that are in there. You know, I love the chat room, love sitting in there and listening to everybody talk, because it really does smarten your butt up. It really does. It smartens you right on up. Now, the other thing is, if you want to get in on the radio program today, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. You can also send me an email if you're so inclined of doing that. You can send it to bruce@brucebirch.com, B-U-R-C-H, bruce@brucebirch.com. And I receive email there pretty much all the time. You know, I have some folks that do great research, and they send me articles from all over the place, trying to help me stay up on all of the events of the world. My own research team. Now, you know, there's several things that are going on today. We've got a couple of U.S. soldiers that were kidnapped in Iraq, and then their bodies were mutilated and left out for U.S. Forces to find them, and they were also booby trapped. I mean, you know, there's that going on that happened in Iraq. Dan Rather left CBS and had a bit of a had some words before he left. We got a storm that's battering Central America going on down south of the border. We've got all kinds of weird, crazy stuff going on today. And later on in the program, we're also going to have a guest on by the name of Leticia Zavala, who is an organizer with the Farm Labor Organizing Committee, FLOC. And she is a farm labor organizer here in North Carolina and actually was able to win a card signing campaign that resulted in the signing of the first collective bargaining agreement in the state of North Carolina for farm workers. So we're going to have her on today. Should be an interesting conversation. We also, but before we get off too far into that, wanted to let you know also that the that White Rose Society, our good friend Ben Birch, who streams this radio program, who also maintains the archives of this show, of all the shows on the Head On Radio Network, and of a lot of more shows there at whiterosesociety.org, he's having a fundraiser. He's trying to keep the bills paid over there so that he can continue to provide the wonderful service that he does provide. It's my understanding that he broke the $2,000 mark yesterday. He's well on his way to achieve his quarterly goal of $10,000 to keep the doors open and the lights burning and the computers whizzing and the internet's humming along. So, you know, drop him a few bucks if you get a chance. I mean, I'm sure he could use it. You know, the least you could do is forego your Starbucks latte. Hopefully you're getting it from a private independent coffee seller. But if you are getting it from Starbucks, forego your latte today and have a regular coffee with cream. And, you know, take that extra $4 and throw it in the hat for Ben Birch, because he does a really wonderful job over there at the White Rose Society. And, by the way, we're not quite related, but, you know, I'll claim him. Okay. Wanted to get that plug in there for Ben because he does a really great job. WhiteRoseSociety.org, click on the donate button and you can leave him some cold hard cash to help him with what he's doing, which in turn helps you with what you're doing. All right, let's get over to the story. I want to talk about Dan Rather to start with, and it's really an interesting situation that he left there. You know, Dan Rather was the anchor of CBS Evening News from 1981 to 2005. 24 years he spent with this network as the anchor of CBS Evening News. Now, he was with them for quite a long, actually 20 years longer. He was there for 44 years, and he had some words today to say to CBS. The statement reads, quote, "I appreciate the words and gestures contained in today's press release by CBS. I leave CBS News with tremendous memories, but I leave now most of all with a desire to once again do regular, meaningful reporting. My departure before the term of my contract represents CBS's final acknowledgement after a protracted struggle that they had not lived up to their obligation to allow me to do substantive work there. As for their efforts of a future with only an office with no assignments, it just isn't in me to sit around doing nothing. So I will do the work I love elsewhere, and I look forward to sharing details about that soon." He also downplayed the influence of the news anchor, his position for 24 years, quote, "Too much is made up of anchors and their personalities, their ups and downs. The larger issues, the role of a free press and of honest, real news in a democracy, the role of technology in supporting a free press, the corporatization of news and its effects on news content, all deserve more attention, more discussion, and more passionate debate," end quote. And I'm reading you that because this is coming from the man who, number one, he covered stories from the Kennedy assassination to the 2001 terrorist attacks. I mean, this man replaced Walter Cronkite, okay? And he signed off with the admonition courage on March the 9th, 2005. You know, Dan Rather, it sort of epitomizes everything that you love and hate about the news. First of all, he was a very, as far as working with CBS News, he was known for having a temper. He was also, you know, known for having very, he was also known with, you know, to share his own emotional, you know, stuff on air. And I had great respect for him. Now, I grew up in the era of Cronkite. I grew up in the era of every evening new, every night, you know, and that's the way it was, you know. Every night for my formative years, I heard Cronkite. And so then Rather comes on, and, you know, and I got to tell you, any guy who could sit down and do that job for 24 solid years has my respect. But I think the larger issue is something that he raised in his little final, you know, talk. And you know, the media, how does the media treat this? The media treats this as Rather leaves nasty words for CBS on his closing day, you know. What's the other headline I read? Let me pull this up. What's the other headline? CBS News slams Dan Rather in a farewell article. Rather fires back at CBS after a protracted struggle. All right. What's messed up about this? Well, what's messed up about this is that Dan Rather resisted the corporatization of news. He resisted people other than newsmen and news editors declaring what's news and what isn't. In a time when, as we reported recently, when we have people, the government, fake news articles that are being produced by the government, fake news stories that are being produced by corporations, little prepackaged 4 to 5 minute segments that they air during the news that make, and you think it's a news story, but what it is something, is propaganda. In a time when that has become prevalent, when there have been over 70 stations nationwide that have done this, what we're seeing is that a man like this stood up against those things and in turn got a kick in the pants for it because he's not a team player, because he didn't get with the program, because he didn't do it the way that they wanted him to do it. And let me tell you something, as someone who has gotten involved in doing this radio program because I believe in a free and fair and open press, God bless you, Dan Rather, for standing up against the invading hordes of the corporatists who want to take over the news. All right, you listen to the Bruce Birch radio program on the Head On Radio Network. If you want to get in on the show, you can dial 1-877-443-2366, or you can send me an email to bruce@brucebirch.com. You and me and Radio for a Free America, we'll be right back.
This evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on this subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
So you catch on quick, I tell you. You're very quick, very quick. But I did want to just, because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I had to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing's still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
We won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good man underground.
Head On.
The major record labels say that downloading their music from the internet is stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show. When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. When an MC rhymes over a sampled beat, that's stealing. Have you ever sung happy birthday to your friend at a restaurant? Watch out, happy birthday is copyrighted. So if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties, or you'd be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money. Don't pay for major label music, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Even better, burn the CDs of the music they like, so they won't even want to buy it. If we pull the plug on the major labels, music gets better. To find out more about what you can do, check out downhillbattle.org.
Planet Check. Planet Check.
Michael Franti from Spearhead talks about the new benefit CD for the nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice.
I'm always involved in Earth Justice as an idea, no matter where I go.
Franti, along with artists Nora Jones, Los Lobos, Willie Nelson, and Bonnie Raitt, donated their music in support of life's absolute necessities, clean air and water.
Music today is not speaking to really what's happening on the streets. It's really important that artists come together, work on projects together, and put out unified voices about what's happening today in our planet.
In the United States alone, more than 70,000 people die per year from air pollution. Music makes a difference. Give it a spin at wherewelive.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Free America. We were talking about Dan Rather before the break, and, you know, I just got to tell you, it's really, the whole National Guard story with Bush, they got him with it. They nailed him with it. You know, it's quite possible that... that Rather, in his zeal to find a story to nail Bush with, became a little bit overzealous. It's quite possible that happened. And you know what? The right wing today is salivating over the departure of Dan Rather from CBS News. They love it. They think it's fantastic. They think that they swift voted him. They think that they did. They think that they're responsible for it. I don't know. I guess time will tell. We're going to go over the phones now. Our good friend and compadre in the struggle, Jim, from an undisclosed location north of North Carolina, is with us. Jim, how are you doing today, my friend?
Here between here and east of Echo. Fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
You know,
what's on your mind today?
Oh, about Dan Rather. You know, basically what they're pulling on him is what I call a Klingenhoffer, the same thing they did to that poor guy on the Achille Lauro in the wheelchair. Kaploop, and into the drink.
Right.
It's about what they're going to do with Bob Schieffer, too. You know,
it's really a shame that they chew these people up and they spit them out with no regard for anything besides their own self-corporatist interest. You know, Jim?
Well, you know, Bob, I look at it this way. Cemeteries are filled with indispensable people, you know?
That's true.
And that's just the way it is. And going to Iraq and this withdrawal, if I may jump from, I don't want to be too desultory here, but I just want to make a statement about that, if I may, please.
Please do.
There's not going to be any withdrawal from Iraq. That's just a political football, and that's just a shimmer. I mean, already, man, they're building 14 huge complexes over there. And what they're going to make Iraq is the 51st state of the United States if they can. And they're going to hold that part of the world together with 14 garrisons, garrisoned by American troops and maybe some Iraqi collaborators. and they're going to keep it just basically until the last drop of blood is spilled and the last drop of barrel of oil is extracted. That's basically what their plans are. You know, Hitler had plans like this in Russia. You know, he was going to have that huge area in the eastern part of Russia dominated by citadels or fortresses, the way we're doing in Iraq, building these 14 huge complexes, and basically reduce the standard of living of the people who live there, the indigenous population, to just a very low level. And we were they were going to be the masters there. That was his plan. And I really believe that that's what the neocons have in store for Iraq. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I hope I am. And I don't mean to be a dog in the manger by saying this, or, you know, I'm not trying to rain on anybody's parade, but there's going to be no withdrawal from Iraq, really, of any kind.
At least not by this president.
Huh?
I said, at least not by this president.
Because the president who comes in after Bush is going to be a wartime president, too. So, I mean, and by that time, we're going to have 14 huge complexes that will be linked together to control an area. Bruce, it was never meant to be put together in the first place. I mean, Iraq was put together by an English cartographer back in the 20th century.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got Shias, you've got Sunnis, and you've got Kurds. These people weren't meant to live together. And when we went over there in 2003 or whenever the hell it was, and we blew apart Saddam's regime, we got ourselves with a big tar baby. We got the tiger by the tail. And, you know, if we should pull out of there and withdraw instantly or whatever, that whole area would explode. I mean, we can't leave right now. I hate to say it. I wish we could. God knows I do. And if you can find somebody with a solution better than that, I welcome it. But I have racked my brains thinking about this thing. What can we do with Iraq? After hearing about those two soldiers that were just butchered, like, worse than carrion.
Yeah.
And we can expect more of the same. I mean, if we were to pull out of there, same thing would happen that happened in Mexico when the French pulled out under Maximilian. That regime lasted how long? A couple months?
Yeah.
same deal. I mean, they're nothing but a puppet state. And, you know, we have got ourselves in one hell of a mess.
Well, that's absolutely the truth. I mean, you know, and I think that...
I mean, looking at it realistically with no altruism whatsoever, because there's nothing altruistic about any of this stuff. This is about oil. Not anybody's peak, not anybody's living standards, not all. They can pull all this crap about what we're doing for them and this, that, and the other. Man, that ain't so. But like I say, we've got those 14 bases going up, and they're going to be linked together in a chain of forts, and that's how they're going to try to hold it, I do believe. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I am. You were saying something. I'm sorry.
Well, I really feel like, you know, that part of what's going to have to happen is, I mean, and as much as I hate to even, well, you know what, I don't hate to say it, because I really feel like we are going to be left holding the bag that George Bush, you know, it's that he created.
Oh, yeah.
Now, whoever becomes president next is inheriting probably one of the worst situations that we've ever seen in this nation, probably right behind Vietnam or right there neck and neck with Vietnam. And not only that, but, you know, we have a situation over there where so-called insurgents really aren't insurgents, Jim. They're citizens of Iraq. And they don't want us there anymore.
No, they don't.
And, you know, if you listen, I don't know, did you listen to the rebroadcast yesterday of last Tuesday's show?
No, I didn't. I wasn't able to.
Well, one of the interviews that I had at the Take Back America conference, actually I had two interviews with two veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the veterans, I think it was on Monday's interview actually, said that, you know, that their unit, when they went over there, did very little, you know, as far as, you know, being heavy-handed, and, you know, they would go into the area that they were patrolling, and they would make friends with the people that you know, who lived there.
And they would
take soccer balls, they would take toys to the kids, they would bring in American goods and sort of like just sort of distribute it, and they would have they were trying to be merchants, or I should say ambassadors of goodwill, mm-hmm. to the people there locally. They never once got hit with insurgent, with IEDs or with any kind of attack.
Now that,
the entire time they were there.
I heard that. Yes, I did. I remember that now. Yeah, you're right.
And you know, and then there were other units that were quite a bit more heavy-handed. You know, the commanders that were you know, more racist, as the gentleman put it. And those units got hit frequently by IEDs. Now, does that mean that there's an active insurgency? I think it's actually Iraqi people going, hey, you know what, you can't treat us this way. And they're fighting back. And I don't see any difference between what they're doing and what we did in the early part of the 1700s, right here in the United States of America. You know, and I, you know, that's probably a controversial statement to make, and that's fine. But I got to tell you, based on what those soldiers told me,
mm-hmm.
that is seems to be the issue. Now, Jim, we're going to have to go over to a break, and I've got a guest coming up. But do get in on the back end of the program, because I'd love to talk to you about this a little bit more.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. Well, listen, who's your guest?
I
caught that. I'm sorry. My mind's just not working too well today. Sorry about that. Okay. Well, listen, thanks for your time, buddy.
All right. Thank you, and hope to talk to you real soon.
Okay. Out here.
All right. And that was our good friend Jim from an undisclosed location. And we do have a break coming up and a guest coming right after that. You're listening to Radio for Free America, the Bruce Birch radio program being brought to you by the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. We're a much less free country today than we were back in 2000, no doubt about that. The government can now barge into our homes without knocking, and it's tracking all our phone calls. But the oppressiveness post 9/11 has not been equally distributed. Just ask an Arab or Muslim American. Chances are they've suffered from harassment and suspicion, if not threats of violence or violence itself from hooligans in our midst. But it's not just from them. It's also from the government itself, which prowls Arab and Muslim neighborhoods and spies on their mosques. They're being so hassled by our government that America is no longer America to them. Take Dr. Sammy Raymond, a radiologist from Chicago. A year ago, June 9th, he and his family, including his mother and mother-in-law, were coming back to the U.S. from a visit to Canada. Federal agents, with their hands on their holsters, surrounded the car. One agent, after inspecting Raymond's passport, and he's a citizen, remember, falsely stated that he was armed and dangerous. For a second there, Raymond thought he was going to be shot. He was interrogated for 2 hours, during which time one of the customs agents said, "Muslims are stupid." Raymond's experience is by no means unique. The ACLU has just filed a suit on behalf of Raymond and 8 others, and there are many, many more. If you're Arab or Muslim in America, the presumption of innocence, I'm sorry to say, has pretty much gone by the wayside. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
G'day, everybody. On this week's Fourth Estate, we have a very candid interview with the one, the only. Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Picture,
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch Radio Program, Radio for a Free America, being brought to you by the Head On Radio Network. Right now, we've got on the phone with us Leticia Zavala, who is an organizer with FLOC, the Farm Labor Organizing Committee here in North Carolina. She is the organizing director of FLOC here in North Carolina, and is coordinating campaigns and activities in North Carolina for the Farm Labor Organizing Committee. Leticia Zavala, welcome to the Bruce Birch Radio Program.
Thank you. Thank you. It's nice to be on.
It's great to have you with us. Now, I was going through your website, and I found some really interesting stuff. But before we get too much into some of the things that that FLOC is doing outside of North Carolina, let's talk about some of the things that you've been able to do inside of North Carolina. Tell me about the organizing drive you just completed and sort of the scope of that.
Well, recently I think our biggest victory was we signed the first collective bargaining agreement with guest workers in the country. And
wow.
Here in North Carolina, we're it's a pretty anti-union state, and we're with farm workers and guest workers who don't have the right to collectively bargain right now. So it was a huge, huge victory, a huge undertaking, and we still have a lot of, it's still a big challenge and a struggle, but I think that we've been able to bring justice to a lot of the recruitment practices and a lot of the labor practices that growers had been used to.
Okay. Tell me about some of that justice that you're referring to. What are some of the things that you were able to get the growers to agree to?
Well, the guest worker program in Mexico is known notoriously for the corruption that exists within the government and the labor agencies. And It's surrounded by briberies where workers have to bribe their way into the program and pay different agencies to make sure that agencies don't get in the way of them getting their visa to come and work in the U.S. legally. That has been cleaned out. We have a system now where workers don't pay anything to come and work in the U.S. They just go and apply for their visa. If they're preferred by a grower, then they just expect the grower to let them know when they're needed. And so a lot of these crooked recruiters and that are making money off of the program are now done away with. We've also cleaned out the Growers Association was well known for supposedly keeping a blacklist as well, and the blacklist was also eliminated. It's very complicated now for growers to fire workers. They have to give them 3 written warnings, and it has to be for legitimate reasons. They can't fire them because they don't like them anymore, because they don't want them to complain or anything like that.
You mean they actually have to have a reason? Well, you know, I think a lot of us here in the U.S. kind of take it for granted that, you know, you're going to be given a fair shake at a job, and I think so to hear that that you guys had to collectively bargain for what a lot of us take for granted is kind of is kind of shocking.
Mm-hmm. And it is, and it's a shame, you know, because right now with all this immigration debate that's going on, and they want to develop new programs, new guest worker programs. The issue is that even if the program is safe and just here, which it seldom is because they seldom have collective bargaining rights, in Mexico or in any other country, it's a whole different story. And they have to be monitored. Any program has to be monitored on both sides because the corruption and the exploitation starts from when you get recruited.
Wow. How many workers or guest workers were involved in this collective bargaining agreement?
We cover, when it started, it was 8,500 workers. Now, not all the workers are in, and we're seeing a drop in the number of guest workers that are going to coming up this year.
So about 8,000?
Yeah, probably this year we'll have about 6,000.
About 6,000?
Mm-hmm.
Why is the number going down?
The tobacco buyout is hurting a lot of our growers. Tobacco prices are dropping, and so growers are going into either mechanization or they're just straight out getting out of the business. They're selling their land to developers. And also, the program itself is expensive. The minimum wage rate for guest workers right now is $8.51. And some of them, they'd rather go and use domestic workers and pay them $5.15.
That's kind of, I never realized that guest workers had a minimum wage that was higher than the federal minimum wage.
They do. It's calculated every year. It went up 26 cents from last year. So they do it in order to protect domestic workers from having to supposedly compete with workers from another country. So that's why they do it. But they do have there's a pretty big gap between domestic workers and guest workers.
Did you encounter, in the middle of this organizing in North Carolina, did you encounter any tactics from the growers that, you know, were suspect? Or, I mean, did you encounter a lot of opposition?
The Farm Bureau was really involved in opposing us. The Right to Work committees got involved as well. Now, for years, there's been discrimination lawsuits after discrimination lawsuits where workers were being discriminated against for complaining, for filing a workers' compensation claim, for asking for drinking water in the fields, for anything, for talking back at the grower, looking at him funny. And year after year, courts had said that since the contract is signed in Mexico, equal employment laws do not apply to guest workers. And then when the union tried to develop a seniority system for union members, they said that was discrimination, and they opposed it on the same basis, on a totally contradictory basis, that they were opposing all these discrimination and blacklisting lawsuits that had come up decades back. And we got a lot of, Farm Bureau got really involved in turning growers, giving the growers misinformation, telling them that they didn't have to abide by certain laws so that they didn't have to be covered under the union. And there was all sorts of tactics that were involved, mainly from growers outside of the Growers Association that did not want to see this contract succeed.
Right. What were some of the conditions that before there was a collective bargaining agreement? What were some of the working conditions and some of the living conditions that these guest workers were facing?
Oh well, as you can imagine, they have a 30% flea rate. Workers flee because sometimes they don't get paid what they're promised. Housing conditions, well, sometimes we find workers in where they don't have mattresses to sleep on. The houses don't have locks on the door because they're not required by the government, where they don't have hot water or the stove and the refrigerator access is not there. They have fridge, they might have a stove, but they're forbidden from using it by middlemen that work for the grower. Working conditions as well, there's a lot of exemptions in agriculture, so drinking water not being available, bathrooms not being available, pesticide exposure. There's been a lot of pesticide issues that have come up recently with children being born with birth defects, and those were just normal things that were within the program that we're slowly, through the grievance procedure and through educating the membership, we've been able to change.
I remember growing up in Southern Virginia, which is just, I mean, not far from where I am sitting right now, about 60 miles away, and seeing a lot of the migrant workers who came up from Mexico at that time who worked in tobacco there as well. You know, I had a friend who was the son of one of the workers, and I went over to his house one time, and I remember going into this house, they didn't even have electricity, and going into this house and thinking, at the time, you know, going, my gosh, this is just terrible. But the other part of that, and it's not even, you know, I was smiling because my producer sent me a little message there. But the other part of this too is that guest worker seems to, the term seems to be almost synonymous with indentured servant. I mean, with some of these descriptions that you're giving me.
Yes, very, very much like it. I mean, a lot of the workers, when they were coming in, this year was the first year that they didn't pay, but before, they were coming in already with at least a $2,000 debt. So they had to work that off. And even though they didn't owe it to the grower directly, they owed it to the recruiter or somebody down there. There were people that signed off blank, like blank loans or gave up their title to their house for them to be able to come and work up here. And if they didn't meet a required productivity, then they were left without a house or with, you know, it's very, very similar to an indentured servitude program.
Leticia, can you hang on with me till after the break?
Sure.
Okay. I'm talking with Leticia Zavala of the Farm Labor Organizing Committee here on the Bruce Birch Radio Program. If you would like to get on the show a little bit later, you can do that by dialing 1-877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this break.
Dear, you're in the road again.
Oh, Ranger, I saw headlights and...
I understand.
Hey, so you're working late, huh?
Yeah, Smokey and I were up thinking of ways to remind people to be responsible for fires they start.
So what'd you come up with?
Well, we're going to make some radio commercials featuring a ranger and talking animals.
A little sophomoric, don't you think?
Yeah, so?
Remember, only you can prevent wildfires. A public service message from Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ag Council.
Listen, man, adding fractions is no big deal.
Nah?
Nah. You just got to find what they call the common denominator. Let me show you.
All right.
Now, see these bottom numbers?
Yeah.
These are the denominators. That one's a 4 and that one's an 8.
Mm-hmm.
You just double both of these numbers so that becomes an 8, too. Then you add them up.
Man, you sure make this easy.
Charles Bennett always dreamed that after college he'd return to the old neighborhood as a teacher. But without the money for tuition, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Oh, sure.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. Call 1-800-332-UNCF. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Hi, you've reached the Johnsons. We're not available to take your call. If you're calling about the apartment for rent, please leave your name and number after the beep, and someone will get back to you.
Hi, my name is Sanjay Rana. I would like to make an appointment to see the apartment.
Oh, hi, this is Robin DiPaola, and I'm calling about the apartment. Please give me a call back at 2...
Hi, hello. This is Rafael Paredes. Please call me back at 718.
This is Ginny Chu. I'd like to talk to you about the apartment. If you can, please call me back.
Hello, my name's Clayton Anderson. I'm calling about the ad in the Sunday paper.
Oh, hello. This is Mrs. Johnson. You must be calling about the apartment.
I am. Is it still available?
Well,
You're the first person to call about it. Are you available?
Housing discrimination of all kinds is illegal in the U.S. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Hi, my name is Joanne, and I have mannequinism. Well, I did have it, but I'm not a mannequin anymore. Doctors said over 75% of my body turned into plastic. They said it's because I wasn't active in my community, because I didn't vote or volunteer or I don't know. All I wanted to do was cry, but I couldn't because I had plastic eyes.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
And you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Free America. And we have on the line with us Leticia Zavala, who is the organizing director of the Farm Labor Organizing Committee here in North Carolina. Leticia, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
And we were talking before we went over the break about kind of like likening the guest worker program to indentured servitude. And you were telling me, I think, that that was not too far-fetched a description.
That's correct. It's when you bring in the guest worker program, and it says it in the name, you know, they're guests. They don't have any legal status in the U.S. Their rights are not the same as any other worker. They don't have the right to collectively bargain. In fact, mm-hmm. if they sign a contract that it says that they can't join a union, then it could actually be illegal for them to collectively bargain. And where, I don't know if you've had any opportunity to go to labor camps, but there's growers that forbid workers from having visitors.
Wow. That blows my mind. They're even forbidden from having, I mean, like, So basically, whatever they sign to, whatever they agree to, is what they have to
respect. Yeah, because they're not monitored. The contract, they're at complete discretion to make a contract within.
A grower can say, for instance, you can't attend church, or you must. Can they require them to do religious activities? Or,
yeah, they have. There was one at one time when I started working for Flock, where a grower would make them go to church with them, or they can forbid them from having religious contact. It happens. We always fight against it, but it does happen.
That doesn't surprise me in North Carolina. that doesn't surprise me because, you know, I can imagine some God-fearing tobacco grower, well, we're going to bring them to Jesus. And sorry, but I just had to get that in there. Well, tell me about some of the things that the Farm Labor Organizing Committee is doing nationwide, Leticia.
Well, we've been involved in this immigration debate nationwide. We believe in, we're trying to make people aware of this thing that we believe in. It's the Freedom Visa. You know, we've signed supposed free trade agreements with Mexico and Canada and with Central America, and those agreements have hurt agriculture all the way around, not just the growers in Mexico, but also growers here where they're suffering. Competition is just tough amongst each other. And the people who are making profit is the big corporations and the processors that have leverage to control the market. And what we're saying is that when you sign agreements like this where you make everything movable between borders, but you don't include labor in it, it throws the economy off an equilibrium. So that's why we're having all these issues with immigration, is because we need to let the market saturate in order for people to go back on their own. They're not going to go back by us threatening them to not hire them. They're not going to go back or not come in because there's military troops at the border. Hunger is a really, really tough thing to fight with military at the border. So we're saying that we need to make sure that workers are given an opportunity to cross as freely as goods and services are. And we're part of coalitions both internationally and nationally where we hope to start pushing those all the way around. We're also, we work a lot with our undocumented workers, a lot of agriculture workers that come in with smugglers and then are slaves to the crew leaders or the growers that buy them from the smugglers. And we also try to do, we do a lot of education with workers on that level.
I think that, if I may interrupt you, I think that one of the things that is really a struggle for me personally is to hear the voices on the anti side of immigration speak as if, you know, well, they're immigrating illegally and therefore they're fair game to be treated however they want to be treated. And I got to tell you, you know, if we have created, and just follow me here for a minute and tell me if I'm completely off base, Leticia. If we have created a situation through our trade agreements that has created more hunger, then wouldn't, I mean, to me, it seems like we owe that, the people who are who have been affected the most by a trade agreement that has created more hunger, that we owe those people, you know, I'll use the word reparations, that we at the very least owe them something.
Exactly. We're the cause of their desperation. We're the cause of them migrating here. We can't go and ruin communities in other countries and then expect them to stay in those communities and die.
Well, and I think that that is probably the most underreported story in the United States is the effects of NAFTA and CAFTA on countries, you know, obviously outside of the United States, that we have actually been very extractive and exploitative with these two trade agreements, and that's never reported inside the United States, never.
Never, not even, unfortunately, not even amongst us immigration advocates. Because the immigration, even if there is some sort of legalization, the immigration debate is not going to end just like it didn't end in 1986. As long as there's hunger in those countries, there's going to be migration. And
yeah,
we need to fix the root of that before we really feel like we're going to be addressing some of those problems.
Well, Leticia Zavala, I'm sorry. It's been great to have you on the program today, and I definitely want to, you know, have you back on in the future. And I certainly hope that you are able to bring justice and a sense of fairness to the folks that you're working with. And I really applaud you for your efforts.
Thank you.
And if there's any way that we can help here at Head On Radio Network with any of these efforts, we are standing by, ready to do that. So,
thank you. We would.
All right.
We have a support group. It's called Project Solidarity, and one of the biggest challenges for us right now is putting democracy in our union. We have 4,800 members scattered throughout the state, and there needs to be a time where they come together and vote on their issues and on their officers, and we depend a lot since they don't have transportation, and the growers are not going to provide transportation for them to come to union meetings. We do ask for people who want to get involved if they want to donate a day out of the year to help us drive workers to union meetings. Those are a big help.
Well, I'll definitely keep that in mind. And what I'll do, Leticia, is we'll talk about this at some point and probably get some sort of PSA out there for you, okay?
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'll get back with you very soon. Leticia Zavala of Farm Labor Organizing Committee of the AFL-CIO, you are listening to the Bruce Birch radio program being brought to you by the Head On Radio Network. We're at 6 o'clock. We'll be right back.
That's a former leader, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. In Iraq, U.S. military officials say a key al-Qaeda in Iraq leader and two foreign fighters were killed in a U.S. airstrike Friday. Those deaths came just before the two U.S. soldiers disappeared from the same area. Also in Iraq, one person died when a suicide bomber attacked a crowd of elderly people waiting to collect their monthly pensions. Earlier, seven people died and 18 were injured in a car bombing at a Baghdad market. In Japan, the country's prime minister has announced a withdrawal of up to 600 non-combat troops from Iraq. Their initial deployment drew strong criticism at home. On Capitol Hill, Senate Democrats have offered resolutions to withdraw U.S. troops from Iraq. One would have them out by next July, while the other would start the withdrawal by the end of this year, with no deadline for completion. Republicans say both plans are defeatist. In Washington, former Bush administration official David Safavian has been found guilty of lying and obstruction. Safavian, who has ties to Jack Abramoff, was accused of covering up his dealings with a disgraced lobbyist. In Vienna tomorrow, President Bush will attend a U.S.-European Union summit where leaders are expected to discuss Iran's uranium enrichment program. It's Mr. Bush's 15th presidential trip to Europe. In Washington, a defense official says a U.S. missile defense system has been activated. The move comes after North Korea announced it has put a long-range missile on a launch pad. In the Pacific Ocean off of Guam, the U.S. has begun one of the largest military exercises since the Vietnam War. Three aircraft carriers are taking part in war games involving 30 ships, 280 aircraft, and 22,000 troops. In New Orleans, 100 National Guard troops carrying M16s will be helping state police secure the city. They arrived after an outbreak of violence over the weekend that killed six people, five of them teenagers. Up to 200 more guardsmen are expected to arrive later. In Arizona today, the head of U.S. Customs and Border Protection said building a wall along the Mexican border is not practical. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Japan is reportedly preparing to resume U.S. beef imports. Those imports were temporarily suspended due to concerns about mad cow disease. Construction of new homes and apartments increased in May following 3 months of declines. The Commerce Department credits warmer, dry weather for the boost. Merrill Lynch says the number of millionaires around the world has increased to 8.7 million. The company also says the largest growth of millionaires is in the Middle East due to record oil revenues. Equifax, one of the three major credit bureaus, says an employee's laptop computer was stolen near London. It contained the names and social security numbers of as many as 2,500 employees. Kmart is selling off some high-priced art from its corporate headquarters. A rare Picasso tapestry and 15th-century Ming Dynasty watercolor from China are among the items being sold. Lego has announced it plans to cut 1,200 jobs. As part of its restructuring plans, it will also close its U.S. manufacturing plant and move production to Mexico. Microsoft has unveiled its new Windows Live Messenger. The instant messaging system is the first major release Microsoft plans to offer to grab a larger share of web advertising revenue. LightSuite crude settled at $68.94 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 33 points, NASDAQ down 3, S&P 500 flat. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's time for another hour of conversation radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce.
Right, you're back on the Bruce Birch Radio Program. This is Bruce Birch, and I am the host, and this is Radio for Free America. So, you know, we got a First Amendment in this country, and it's all about free speech. What I would like to recommend that you do is exercise your right to free speech by picking up the telephone and giving me a call. 1-877-443-2366. Did I go around the bend to get you on that one? I certainly hope I did. I certainly hope I did. All right, we were talking with Leticia Zavala the past half hour about the Farm Labor Organizing Committee in here in North Carolina and some of the things that they were able to do, including the very first collective bargaining agreement with guest workers. So yes, Virginia, they have been organized, at least here in North Carolina. I think that's fantastic. I really do. And I really think that the only way that we're going to be able to bring about some change in this nation is through people like Leticia Zavala, who are going out there and doing the hard work that needs to be done in organizing farm workers. We need to organize construction workers. We need to organize everybody. And because you know what? These companies, these corporations out there, they are multinational. They get it. They get that it's an international thing. They get that it's a worldwide thing. Why do we as workers not quite get that yet? I think that we need to get it, and we need to organize with unions that are international unions, that are spreading, you know, democracy in the workplace around the world. That needs to happen. Just wanted a quick programming update. Our good friend Bob Kincaid, his radio program called Head On with Bob Kincaid. Tonight he's going to have a very interesting interview, and I definitely want to stick around. I hope I'll be able to hear this this evening. It will be with First Lieutenant Erin Watada, and Erin is the first lieutenant out at Fort Lewis in Washington who refused to go to war in Iraq because he calls it an illegal occupation. So it's going to be an interesting interview. Now, if you want to go check out the website for Erin Watada, you can go to thankyoult.org. That's thankyoult.org. Very interesting show planned for Bob for tonight. So do tune in for that. And, we were just talking about the whole unionization situation, and it really seems like to me that we are living in a time where these companies that have been so extractive. Now, earlier, and I confirmed what I was saying with her. NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA, Central American Free Trade Agreement. These two agreements were some of, you know, was one of two of the most extractive, exploitative agreements ever created in the history of this nation. All right? And here's why I say that. Now, the idea, of course, the utopian vision of these free trade agreement aficionados was that by creating a free trade between the United States and Mexico with the North American Free Trade Agreement and also Canada, of course, we're not going to talk about Canada right now because Canada isn't really the kind of economy that Mexico is. Mexico is a very poor economy. NAFTA helped create an even poorer economy in Mexico. The poor got poorer, and the rich got richer. NAFTA had the effect of creating more wealth for the upper 2% of Mexico. That was the effect of NAFTA. Oh, yeah, and we were able to use cheap labor until we discovered that, oh, my goodness, labor's cheaper in China. And so many of the factories that were created as a result of NAFTA down in Mexico, I'm speaking of textile factories primarily, such as Burlington Industries, and there's others, those factories ended up moving to China because China had cheaper labor. After like 5 years, these factories, where they created these little mill towns down there in Mexico, very much like they did here in the American South post-Civil War, okay, the Cone Mills and the Burlington Industries and some of these other textile manufacturers. They went to Mexico under the guise of the North American Free Trade Agreement because it opened up this final frontier of cheap labor. And they went down there and they created these monstrosities in these mill towns down there in Mexico. And then guess what happened? Oh, we can't compete with the Far East textile manufacturers, poor as us, we're not able to make as big a profit. And they cried all the way to the bank as they pulled up roots and went to China and outsourced their labor once again to continue being able to make profit at a level unheard of. Now, I'm not against profit by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not. You know, I do not ascribe to the tenets of communism in any way, shape, or form. I do ascribe to the tenets of socialism in a lot of ways. But that's just my personal. I would call myself a democratic socialist because I do believe that the state has a responsibility to provide health care and housing to, you know, the poorest of us. And those who want to go out and make a bunch of money, you should also have the freedom to be able to do that too. But you don't do that at the expense of everybody else. Now, let me check something here. Okay. Now, you know, having said all that, this past year, another free trade agreement was passed, the Central America Free Trade Agreement, which would enable us to go to the countries down in, Central America, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, Venezuela, etc., to continue our exploitative practices. Now, when I say our, you know, I don't really count myself in the same place as a lot of these folks who are doing this, but I will say this, you know, When an agreement is signed in the name of the United States, guess what? The people outside of the United States, they look at me, because I'm an American, as being synonymous with the agreements that my government engages in. Now, CAFTA itself, if I remember correctly, passed by one vote. I'm looking into the chat to see if I'm correct on that. I think I'm correct. And if I remember correctly, the one vote that passed that piece of legislation was none other than Robin Hayes of Charlotte, North Carolina, who had voted against it to start with, and after Tom DeLay twisted his arm, Robin Hayes, who is from the heart, who represents the very heart of the textile manufacturing community in North Carolina, voted for it. Now, there were a lot of Democrats who voted for it as well, but I believe he was the one tie-breaking vote. They held the vote open for a number of hours, and you know, until they got their way. That's how the Republicans work. There's a 15-minute my understanding was there was a 15-minute time limit on votes, but in the House of Representatives, ladies and gentlemen, time gets suspended, and so 15 minutes can often turn out to be several hours. But Robin Hayes, yes, what a piece of work. So, and actually, he's got I think he's got a Gulf War veteran running against him down there in the Charlotte area I think his name's Tim Dunn, D-U-N-N. Anyway, point being is that, you know, we have these Republicans to thank for these wonderful pieces of legislation that are creating more poor people down in Central America and Mexico. And as a result, these folks are flocking here. I mean, and can you blame them? I mean, if we go down there and we suck all the resources out of the natural resources out of their countries, and then, you know, what do they want us to do? You know, how can we realistically expect them to stay there when we're making them poorer people? I just don't understand that, if we're supposed to be raising the bar. All right, you listen to the Bruce Birch radio program on the Head On Radio Network. This is Radio for a Free America. Give me a call, 1-877-443-2366. I'll be right back.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi. LOL. Well, AISI, it was NBD.
Kids are spending more and more time online, and even if you heard what they're typing, you probably wouldn't know what they're saying.
Some PPL, whatever. ISS.
They chat online in a language full of acronyms, and unless you use it every day, you won't understand it.
YIWGP.
You won't know what they're saying, or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. So here's an acronym for you. HDOP. Help Delete Online Predators. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council. Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Last year, one in five children was sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things happen in a circle? The seasons, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. The circle starts when we recycle trash. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it. Complete the circle. For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Conventions, talking of your crusade, talking of your nation, and other things too terrible to mention. And you proclaim your Christianity, you proclaim your love of God, you talk of apple pie and mine. I've just got one question, and I want an answer. Tell me, who would Jesus bomb? Maybe Jesus would bomb the Syrians, because they're not Jews like him.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. That's David Rovics. DavidRovics.com. Excuse me, DavidRovics.com. You know, Dave is actually in Europe right now doing a tour and is going to be doing a tour in the southern United States when he gets back this fall. Probably will be somewhere along the lines of September, I think is what he was talking about doing. But Dave is a fantastic progressive singer-songwriter, does a lot of very progressive music, and has a wonderful spirit as well. I've had him on the radio program with John Fox and myself, the one that we do called Fourth Estate Radio, and working on trying to get him onto this new radio program sometime soon. But he is right now in Britain. Matter of fact, he's playing a date in London tonight, I believe. So, but you can check out and download all of his music. He has every song he's ever written available for download from his website, davidrovics.com. So, if you want to get in on the radio program, you can do that by dialing 1-877-443-2366. That'll get you right into the studios of the Head On Radio Network, where my good friend Bob will pick up the phone and have a little chat with you before you have a little chat with me. If you know, it's open topic. If you can call about whatever you want to talk about, we would much be it's all about free speech, and if you don't use it, then basically you're not, you don't got it. Also, if you're on this radio stream, you're hearing it because of Ben Birch at the White Rose Society. No relation to me. Maybe third or fifth cousin twice removed by marriage. I don't know. If you do want to, you're hearing it as a result. He's having a fundraiser right now. You can do that, but you can check out his website. He archives this show as well as many, many, many other shows at whiterosesociety.org. He's doing a fundraiser. Help him out. And also, again, I would like to encourage you to go and check out our chat room. We have a few people in there. I know it's kind of early in the day for chatting, but you can go and check that out if you're so inclined by going to headonradionetwork.com and then click on the little chat room link there on the left side of the page. That'll get you in there. Now, how about this? We've got our good friend Jim back with us from an undisclosed location in the wilds of West Virginia. Jim, I think, wants to talk to us about NAFTA. So we're going to go into a different topic today, aren't we, Jim?
Yeah, Jim, a.k.a. Chatty Cathy. hey, by the way, do you still have all that Cadillac Stetson?
Do I still have your Cadillac Stetson?
You still have all that Cadillac Stetson you had on the...
Oh, no, I don't. Today I don't. Today I'm hatless. I'm hatless today.
Okay. I have on my B. Lily. It looks wonderful.
Right on.
Anyway, you know, CAFTA and NAFTA to me equal one word, SHAFTA. And that's exactly what they've done, because I thought the original premise behind these two laws or promulgations or whatever you want to call them would be the principle of this, a raising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah.
But
that
was
the original premise, yes.
I mean, what happened?
Well, what happened was, I don't know, probably the same thing that happened with communism. It looked great on paper. In practice, it created a lot of trouble and strife and starvation and death and mayhem. And meanwhile, the corporations got richer.
Well, speaking of communism, it would appear to me as though these two laws or these two programs or whatever you want to call them have just become instruments of American imperialism.
Yes.
And, of course, according to Lenin, imperialism is the highest stage of capitalism. And, you know, Lenin, I think, Communism in the State, one of his books that he wrote. And I'm just, I sometimes wonder about things like this as far as, in terms of historical theory and dialectics are concerned, exactly, you know, what is really going on here? And is a dialectic-type theory at work here? Because, I mean, for the rich to get richer and the poor to get poorer, and for someone to come out and say the haves and the have-mores are my base to leave this country, just how long can that last, Bruce?
Well, before... You know, there's a popular uprising. I really don't know, but I think what's most interesting about what's going on right now is that the free market people, the folks who are the Ayn Randers and the free market libertarians, and you know they have created and pushed this our government further toward their utopian vision of unrestrained commerce than we've ever been before in this nation. And I think what we're beginning to see just on the tip of the iceberg of the effects of that, the effects being that that the gap between those who have and those who don't is becoming wider and wider and wider.
At the expense of the middle class.
At the expense of the middle class. The middle class is disappearing, Jim.
How well I know. I mean,
the middle class is going away, and I would dare say, and I haven't seen a study, but I'm just going to make an uneducated North Carolinian guess that the middle class will all but disappear if we continue at this same rate with this same type of unregulated capitalism in our country. Probably, I'll give it 20 years.
Well, you know, Bruce, even a machine has to have a governor or some type of control on it to keep it from just literally destroying itself. And basically, this is what happened in other countries like France and in Russia. I mean, what we're looking at is a repeat of history. When you have all the haves at one end of the spectrum and the have-nots at the lower end, you're going to have more have-nots than haves, and they're going to look for an unusual solution to solve a very, very naughty problem. And I'm afraid that the way they're going to solve it is to be Alexandrian. And like cut the Gordian knot with one swoop of the sword, if you know what I mean.
Well, and I totally agree. I think that that
plain this, piece of wood tips fly, and nobody cares.
We have a situation wherein regulations have been removed. The governor of the engine, if you will, and using your analogy, has been taken away, and the thing keeps running at a higher and higher and higher revolution.
It's going to throw a rod.
And it's going to throw a rod at some point. And what's the rod going to be, though, Jim? That's the question. What's going to derail these free market conditions that are going on? That would be something to meditate on and to think about. Is it going to be that the middle class says, hell no, no more? Or they're going to sit around and sort of be like, well, I'm comfortable with my 2.5 cars right now, and I won't have to deal with this 20 years from now. It'll just have to be my kids.
Well, that's a generational thing, Bruce. I mean, you know, for example, you will see that social upheavals in history did not come in all one generation necessarily, that it took some type of casus fideris or immediate cause to spark, you know, to make the flame light. For example, the revolution in Russia was sparked by the onset of the First World War. Mm-hmm. I mean, believe it or not, before World War One, things were going pretty well in Russia, and things were getting a lot better for the peasants and things like that, particularly with the land reforms of Stolypin, one of the Tsar's ministers who was assassinated. You know, the serfs had been given their land by Alexander II, and then Stolypin in 1911 let the serfs have all the land together, and things were getting better. But then the World War came, and that's what really started, you know, that really blew the neighborhood wide open.
Yeah.
You know what,
Jim, I got to take a break, Jim. Can you hang on?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. We'll be right back. This is Bruce Birch, the Bruce Birch Radio Program on the Head-On Radio Network. We'll be right back. It's blind danger boot all over again.
I can take care of myself. I can make a peanut butter sandwich. I can brush my teeth and I can give myself a bath. I can walk home alone from school. I can pick dinner from the trash behind the deli. I can watch the baby for the whole weekend. I can keep a baseball bat by my bed just in case there's trouble. Don't worry about me. I can take care of myself.
If you're in jail, who'll be there to take care of your family? Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Hi. My name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. This is from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Bad enough that officials at Homeland Security did a lousy job of protecting our ports or safeguarding the nation's nuclear and chemical plants, but now it turns out they've been cashing in left and right. The New York Times reports that more than two-thirds of the department's most senior executives are now working for companies in the Homeland Security field. Tom Ridge, former head of Homeland Security, for instance, is now on the board of Savvy Technology, a maker of radio frequency ID equipment. Check this out. The Department of Homeland Security was promoting Savvy Technology while Ridge was in charge. And now that Lockheed is about to buy up Savvy Technology, Ridge stands to rake in a bundle. A savvy career move, and a sleazy one, too. Ridge's deputy, Asa Hutchinson, also bellied up to the trough. He went to work for a Washington lobbying firm that represents Lockheed and other Homeland Security contractors. The head of that lobbying firm hailed him as one of the chief architects and implementers of the vast new security infrastructure. When public service is just a way to get a government ATM card, our homeland's in trouble. I'm Matt Rothschild. And that's how I see it.
right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Free America. Right here on the Head On Radio Network. We went out of the break. We had to put Jim on hold because we were running up against that clock, and now we're on the backside of the clock. And, Jim, are you back with us?
I'm on the backside. There you go. What can I say? What can I say?
I knew you'd get a kick out of that.
Well, you know, hey, read Cole Porter lyrics. That is the key. It's Dr. Lecter with State to Agent Starling, okay?
Okay.
Instead of reading Marcus Aurelius, read Cole Porter. But, you know, going back to the subject of what we're talking about social engineering, for lack of a better term, okay? You know, these changes in the society can come from a number of things. I mean, and I'm just using my wildest imagination here. Can you imagine a natural cataclysm on the American continent that would create, for example, a separation in which the Gulf of Mexico would be connected to the Great Lakes, and volcanologists are telling us that this could happen at any time? Or if a tsunami were to engulf the eastern seaboard, that would wipe out major cities and things like this. You know, it just shows you how fragile our whole social structure is and how fragile our economy is and how it's based upon, you know, the weather and the whether or not the planet decides to remain in the same shape that it is now or whether or not we're going to have to go back and redraw our maps. You follow what I'm saying?
I do follow what you're saying, and I think, well, you know, today is the day, or is it yesterday? It was yesterday that the federal government evacuated. You know that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they've gone for 2 weeks.
And they're gone for 2 weeks, and I'm working right now to get the fellow on the program who actually broke the story. So we'll see if we can get him on sometime in the next couple weeks to talk about that.
Here. But, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, we are subject to so many, we are so fragile, and our systems are so fragile. And it's just amazing of how quickly they can be disrupted in the twinkling of an eye.
Well, and I think that's, you know, that is highly indicative of the fact that we aren't all that settled or, you know, Homeland Security. Let's talk about Homeland Security, Jim. What does Homeland Security mean to you?
Nothing.
It's
a shimmer. It's a fraud. I don't feel any more secure than you.
No. As a matter of fact, when I went to D.C. last week, I felt less secure, honestly.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I thought it was kind of strange when they put those huge bollards up in front of the White House back in 83 after Reagan, you know, they were trying to protect him, and that was the extent of it. You know, before then, it was, you could just drive right by. And now we have these color codes and stuff like that that look like some child's pastel chart, and that's about all Homeland Security means. And we saw how effective they were in Katrina, and we're supposed to get an increase of 35% of those 4-5 category hurricanes in the next from now on. And of course, you know, I don't think Homeland Security is doing a whole lot. And if you go to an airport, you'll notice that there are a lot of people that don't even bother looking at your bags. You know,
yeah,
I thought the whole thing's a farce myself. Maybe I'm
wrong. I went through LAX coming back. I was out west in the spring and was coming through LAX on the way back and had a bag full of wires. You know, all my radio stuff was there, my coiled up wires and rounded up things and strange little devices. And would you know that they never even asked me? Never once did they even ask me what was in the bag.
Really?
Never want, and they didn't, and it ran. They ran it through the X-ray, and sent me on my way.
Well, I mean, those people are just basically working for an agency in which they're either contract employees or federal employees with no real tenure or any type of Title V rights. That's what they try to do to them, and so you know they could care less. They could just care less, really. I don't know. I think it's
yeah. I think.
We're looking at some hard times coming ahead, and I don't mean to tell
you so.
I'm on your program or anything, but I appreciate the largesse as far as giving me air time this afternoon. But, you know, those are the things I just wanted to throw out. There's so many factors that we can place into this equation.
And I think that, Jim, what we're going to find is that as time goes on, especially with this administration, they want controlled chaos. Because within controlled chaos, there is the opportunity to loot the treasury.
Yeah, that's true. But I can tell you one thing. Things like this have a way of beating their way back to these people, and they're going to be sorry they did it because they're going to pull the whole structure out from under themselves. That's what they don't have sense enough to realize.
Yeah,
you know, the middle class is the people are the people who help keep them up their ears in mink, you know?
Yep.
And they're destroying their own, they're cutting off their nose to spite their face. I mean, FDR had sense enough to realize this back in the 30s. Why can't they realize, have sense enough? And, you know, why do they subscribe to the theories of people like Grover Norquist, who wants to drown government and all the programs in the bathtub? I mean, any thinking person would see that supply side doesn't work. They can see that this greed is not good. I mean, you know, I don't understand it. I really don't. Maybe I'm the one who's stupid.
No, Jim, I think you're probably closer to the mark than the majority of folks out there, as much as I hate to say it.
Listen, muchas gracias for buen tiempo, okay?
También.
And try a beret next time when you put on your webcam.
Okay, well, yeah. We'll do it. Thanks a lot, Jim.
All right, take care of yourself, buddy.
Okay, you too. And that was our good friend Jim from West Virginia. Thanks a lot, Jim, for calling into the program, providing a wonderful conversation this afternoon. You still got a chance. If you want to get in on the show, you can dial in at 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877, the number 4, head on. Definitely would love to hear from you if you have some ideas about SHAFTA, as my good friend Jim calls NAFTA and CAFTA put together is SHAFTA, or something else that's on your mind. Please do give us a call. Now, yeah, we're not going to go to a break right now because, we're not quite there yet. But, it really does amaze me at some of the shenanigans that goes on in D.C. and some of the things that happens with regard to their stance on various countries and their stance on this or stance on that. And, you know, it really blows my mind because we're looking at a situation in Iraq where there was we had this guy contained. We were doing flyovers on a daily basis. Clinton, I think, even was bombing Saddam at certain points during his presidency. We had this guy contained, and there really was no way that he was creating the things that they said he was creating because, well, to start with, he didn't have the materials. And we're standing right there watching him the whole time. But on a lark, we decided that it was time to invade Iraq and take over the country because we have this newfound political capital in the name of September the 11th. Well, now we're beginning to reap what we have sown. What's happening in North Korea? North Korea has fueled a long-range, let me just read this to you. North Korea declared Tuesday it has a right to carry out long-range missile tests despite international calls for the communist state to refrain from launching a rocket. Well, were we not paying attention? What happened? All right, you're listening to the Bruce Birch radio program. Radio for Free America on the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
By James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told him that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fat, some flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel. Not only their feed, small towns can be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or selling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more eco-wrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back thanking me for my concerns and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off 2 indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're back on the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Free America, here on the Head On Radio Network. We do have a few minutes left. If you want to try to get in on the show, you're more than welcome to give it a try. 1-877-443-2366. You know, I just wanted to, before we get too wrapped up here, now Bob Kincaid is up next, Head On with Bob Kincaid. He's got Lieutenant Aaron Watada. Excuse me. Lieutenant Aaron Watada. No, yes, I did clear my voice. No, I didn't clear it while I was saying his name. Lieutenant Aaron Watada, who is the first lieutenant who has refused to deploy to Iraq. He is not a deserter. He's not a conscientious, so I guess maybe you would call him a conscientious objector. He is a refuser. He is a don't obeyer in the decider's terminology. He is not going to go to a rocker. And he's going to be on Head On with Bob Kincaid right after this radio program, and that'll be in about 10 minutes or thereabouts. Bob's show will be on right here on the Head On Radio Network. Just, you know, Bob does a fantastic show, and I always enjoy the guests that he gets on. He gets top-notch folks on. But, I, you know, before I wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on militarily. You know, we have a lot of irons in the fires. The fires being places where we are supposedly fighting. Now, let's talk about the first thing. The first thing is that citing a lack of cooperation, the government's internal auditing organization said in a letter to an Ohio senator last week that they will continue to limit intelligence oversight to formal requests from congressional intelligence committees. The government account, the GAO now, the Government Accountability Office, this is what GAO official Derek Stewart says regarding oversight of intelligence and military. Quote, for us to undertake such work would require the sponsorship of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence or the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. While we have the authority to do such work, we lack the cooperation we need to get our job done in that area. As a result, unless and until we receive such cooperation and given GAO's limited recourse, we will continue our longstanding policy of not doing work that directly relates to intelligence matters unless requested to do so by one of the select intelligence committees. So basically, the GAO is not going to be keeping an eye on the intelligence community. In other words, the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, his department, the CIA, the NSA, you know, all of these organizations that are running freaking amok and recording all of your telephone calls and emails and probably private conversations that you have in the park while you're throwing frisbee at your dog, talking on the cell phone. What they're trying to say is that they're scared. They're scared. Oh, they're scared. They're scared of what might happen if they find out the truth about what's been recorded by these illegal wiretapping spying agencies. Of course, they're recording my conversation right now. Actually, Ben Birch is recording it. And they can download it for free later at whiterosesociety.org. Now, let's go over to the second story. That's the first story. The first story is the GAO decides it's not going to scrutinize whether intelligence, you know, the intelligence communities. Second story is that a senior military U.S. military official says, quote, the Taliban has made a comeback and we have the next 90 days to crush them. Wait a minute, didn't we kick their ass one time before? Why are we... that's right. We went to Iraq and left them to run amok again. There is a new offensive being launched in Afghanistan, and it's called Operation Mountain Thrust. It's involving almost 11,000 U.S. troops, and it's focused on four southern Afghanistan provinces. Apparently, the Taliban has reemerged as the Afghan government has created vacuums of power, says the unnamed, unidentified official. Proceeds from the growing opium trade in the region has helped the Taliban obtain new weapons and pay local officials. The Taliban leader, Mullah Omar, remains at large despite a $10 million reward offered by the United States. Maybe some of us radio hosts at the Head On Radio Network can take off, and maybe we can do live broadcasts from Afghanistan while on the sly looking for Mullah Omar, and that way we can fund our station, our network. Okay. U.S. military officials believe that he has established a safe haven in Pakistan where U.S. soldiers cannot operate. Like they're not operating there. They're just putting on street clothes and doing it. More than likely, allegedly. The Taliban, which, of course, outlawed the growing of opium, is now being funded from by opium. So everyone has their price, even fundamentalist Muslims. But that's that story. We're talking about military, right? We're keep staying in the military vein. Apparently, John Kerry has come out and said something about the plan or lack thereof by the Bush administration about Iraq, and that is, he says, and I quote, "Stay the course is not a plan, and what this administration wants is to have a fake debate as usual. There, you hear the drum beat on every television show from every commentator, cut and run, cut and run, cut and run, cut and run. That's their phrase. They found their three words. They love to do that, and they're going to try to make the elections in November a choice between cut and run or stay the course. That is not the choice. My plan is not cut and run. Their plan is lie and die." Now, let me just say this. I think it's very important that we support those that are at least trying to speak for us in the Congress. But it's also equally important that we do what we need to do, that we raise our voices, that we do talk to our neighbors, that we get out there and try to change this right-wing lean that this country has taken over in the last 5 years. I believe that the very future of this republic depends on that. And you can hold me to that. Tomorrow we're going to have on the radio program Miles Rappaport, who is the executive director of DEMOS, which is a non-governmental agency that does a lot of good work related to democracy issues. We'll have him on tomorrow afternoon. Tonight, Bob will have on Aaron Watada. And who knows?